Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Steve Jobs said, "The secret of my success is that we have gone to exceptional lengths to hire the best people in the world." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who also helps clients hire the best people in the world. Today's Playmakers company is a seven-time Inc. 500 5000 honoree. With us today is a CEO who completed the 2001 Hawaiian Ironman World Championships. This great playmaker is Tad McIntosh. Tad is president and CEO of Humcap. Now, Tad founded Humcap in 2001 with the desire to provide better service to new and established companies in the areas of recruiting and human resources solutions to help them win the war for talent. He and his team design and provide solutions that include HR ASO, HR consulting, HR outsourcing, talent management, recruiting services, organizational consulting, and executive search. Prior to founding Humcap, Tad was the chief talent officer at Broadband Gateways in Plano. Earlier, he spent 5 years as Director of Engineering Recruiting Services for Source Services. Tad also was a commander for recruiting for the U.S. Army in Atlanta, Georgia. His other Army assignments include the U.S. Honor Guard in Washington, D.C., and the DMZ in South Korea. Tad finished his active duty service as a captain and was awarded the Meritorious Service Medal. Tad earned the coveted Army Airborne, Ranger, and Air Assault qualifications. Well, Tad, we have a lot to talk about. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much.
Well, we were talking about this before the show started, but how does a graduate of West Point with a BS in Engineering and a Master's of Science from Central Michigan University get into the recruiting and the HR business?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, I was getting out of the military with an engineering degree and some technical aptitude, and I really wanted to be involved in the technology industry. And so the position I was hired for coming out of the Army was in the tech recruiting business. So basically helping companies straight, you know, coming out of the Army recruiting with an engineering degree, mixing that together to help them get the best and brightest folks right out. And then I got more involved in the HR side once I went to go work at Broadband Gateways, because there's a very tight link between, you know, human capital, you know, both acquisition of the best people and keeping and retaining and developing the best people.
It's interesting that you have both the engineering and the military. Which came first as far as interest? Was it engineering or was it military or both?
Probably the military part. And why engineering is I have a math science aptitude, and at one point, at West Point, everybody got a BS in engineering. When I was there, you could get a degree in something else, but I had an aptitude for math and science, and engineering has always interested me, so I decided that I wanted to go to West Point, got to West Point, and then became an engineering major once I was there.
So outside of recruiting engineers, which I believe is your forte, or Humcap, do you do any engineering work right now, or do you keep your fingers in it, or has that gone by the wayside after starting the business?
I only get to tinker with how Humcap works and how we engineer our processes, but I work with clients very closely, and I generally understand how their products work, whether it be a software product, hardware product, or a physical device of some sort.
Well, you started the business in 2001. Was it your intent when you went into HR that you want to start your business, or did you begin to see something that you want to do that was unique and different?
I didn't go into HR to start a business, and even into recruiting to start a business. I really saw an opportunity for service to small, mid-size, and really fast-growing companies because of the needs for both human resources and recruiting. But at these small-sized companies, most companies either can't afford or don't want full-time HR recruiting teams on their payrolls. So it was an opportunity I saw for that fast-growth 5 to 500 employee type company that, you know, 95% of all American businesses are under 500 employees. So it's a really big market, you know, of little companies.
Well, in reading some of your literature, you also do, I think it's called fractional HR, where you become their HR department. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we've got, you know, 50-plus clients where we're doing HR for them month in, month out. And when somebody wants to call the HR department, literally they're calling a HumCap person who's at their site, generically speaking, only part of the time. And that's where the fractional comes in. Into play.
Well, one of your tagline is winning the war for talent while living the golden rule. Let's talk about the military and West Point, because West Point, and correct me if I'm wrong, is a little difficult to get into. Is it based on grades and interest in the military to get into West Point?
It's a little bit based on what they call the total candidate qualification, and that's a combination of grades, leadership, athletics, and, you know, really track record and demeanor of what that young person has done up to their, you know, application to West Point.
Well, you've had a lot of positions, as I talked about some of them, Army Airborne Ranger, Air Assault, you were the DMZ in South Korea, U.S. Honor Guard in Washington, D.C. So how much of the military has played a role in your business, HumCap?
A lot, actually, because when you go back to formative experiences, no matter whether it's military or it's a non-military track, those experiences that people have between, say, their mid-teens to their mid-20s, those shape a lot of things that happen in their future. So I tend to look at things from a process-oriented view because I have an engineering degree and I think in those terms. But then also, the military has such great training around doing things well and doing things right from a very small unit level all the way up to big unit level. So we work on consistently both having processes that support the problems we have to solve for our clients, as well as having flexibility around how we apply those processes and giving our team members the ability to make decisions on the move, much like the military. So I think there's a big impact of the military on HumCap. And candidly, I think some of our clients see that and like that. And I don't think they hire us because we're former military, but I think they sense our level of service to them. That's probably one of the key things about it, is what's common with most HumCap folks is some of the, you know, the core values we have, which one of them is, you know, serving heartily. You know, and that has to do with coming with a mindset to serve and doing it in a way that's not self-serving, but that's client-serving, employee-serving, candidate-serving. And being able to come at it that perspective is different than most businesses. So we hope and we work on that our interactions around with customers, employees of customers and candidates, you know, is a positive, you know, life-breathing experience, not a either demoralizing and or challenging, if you will.
Let's talk about leadership for a moment. As I was listening to you, and from what little I know about the military, because I'm not former military, one of the big, especially being a alumni of West Point, it's all about leadership. Is that correct? It's developing your leadership abilities, leadership in the field, leadership with everything you're doing. And most individuals don't get that kind of leadership training in school. So my guess is you're also bringing that into HumCap too, both in working with your clients and working with your people. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. But I think the beginning of leadership is followership. And the beginning of leadership is good leadership is serving something and doing something bigger than yourself. Because everybody always talks about the leader and thinks of the, you know, the general, or thinks of the CEO, or thinks of the other things. Well,
they had to start someplace.
It does start someplace, but I think that the best leaders start as followers, and they understand really well what are they personally following, who are they personally following, and then how do they inspire those around themselves to say, hey, folks, this is the direction we're pretty much going to go. These are the goals that we have. Here's what I think, and here's some outlines to plans and abilities to get there. But then it comes down to, you know, are people following? Are they following well? And I think that one of the things that military people in general. And again, this is not so much about HUMCAP, but it's a big, big issue with former military people, including me, is we think people, because our formative experiences were around, you know, going to West Point or going to basic training, whether it be Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Merchant Marines, whatever that is, we kind of tend to think too much that that's a normalized, normal experience. And it's not. And it's less and less. In the post 9/11 era, less than 1% of Americans, you know, raise their right hand and serve our country. So the veterans are really probably one of the biggest minorities in America. They don't get recognized as such. But one of the military mistakes that people, veterans like myself, sometimes make is assuming that they really get what we're saying when we say it, because they don't have those formative experiences, no fault to them. So one of my greatest challenges is continuing to ask myself as a leader, do they really get it? What do they get the big picture, what they call in the military, the commander's intent? Do we have the operational processes built so that they can do it with or without me? And do I have the supporting mechanisms? Because we're a service company. So every interaction with a customer, possible customer, candidate, employee of a client is a service interaction. And we want that to be a great service interaction. Are we serving heartily? Are we winning as a team, with the team being the customer, the customer's employees, the candidates? Is it really winning? Or is it, you know, win-lose or win-win or lose-lose? Is all those things come into play? So again, coming back to your question, has the military helped? Absolutely. Are there challenges being a former military person in leadership? Absolutely. And I see it a lot. It's easy to not see it when I'm hanging out with other former military folks. We get each other very, very quickly. But it's in that interpretation and that application and those processes that where a lot of people like myself can have less success or less greatness, if you will, if they don't. And I fall into that group, if you will.
In listening to you and listening between the lines, would you agree that a big part of leadership is commitment to whatever it is that you're focused on?
Oh, absolutely. If the leader's not as committed or more committed than all the followers, there is no, you know, there is no execution and there is no success. Because if you look at it from, you know, ever since, you know, the dawn of time, when you study leadership and you see certain things, you see a great, those that succeed, whether it's succeeding in good things or succeeding in bad things, because, you know, leadership's not always good. You can lead towards bad things, right? So yes, you've got to be highly committed. And that's, you know, if you were to say what's a big deal to us at HUMCAP, we're highly committed, you know, to winning the war for talent while living the golden rule and being highly committed to that. I have to be introspective a whole lot of in testing my own commitment and my own resolve to that, you know, kind of a two-part mission. It's not just winning, but it's winning while treating others like they want to be treated. It's not just treating others like they want to be treated, but doing that in the fashion that we're getting somewhere good and somewhere positive in progressing a client and an employee and a candidate's future. So it's that the commitment's high, you know, when things are going well. But I think you see a lot of examples in our current society where people are committed to things, but they're not always committed to the good of all around them. I mean, that's pretty, at least to me as a citizen of, you know, of this country and as a person in the world, that commitment, you can finally find out what people are truly committed to based on watching what they do.
Well, outside of your military career, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, you also participated in the 2001 Hawaii Ironman World Championships. And as we're talking about commitment, there had to be a major commitment for your training just to be able to compete in that. How much time did you spend training to be in the Ironman World Championships?
Well, if you ask my wife, Pam, who's awesome, and we've been married 27 plus years now, she would say too much. But it's a lot of training, and I just kind of saw the Iron Man, and everybody saw it on the TV where they see the people finishing crawling in the, you know, in the early ABC days of putting it on there, and it just kind of caught my eye. And I was a high school and college swimmer, so it gave me a little bit of an advantage to start out with, not being too concerned about the long swim. But it was a lot of time. But I personally still do a lot of high level fitness things, and after I do my personal quiet time in the morning, you know, 6 days a week, I'm out doing something, because it helps me both reinforce my quiet time personally, invigorates my body, and there is something to, you know, body, mind, soul, and I come a whole heck of a lot better to the office to help out and, you know, and be a better boss, be a better, you know, husband, be a better dad, be a better citizen of America, be a great world, you know, citizen when I'm doing those things.
I would think there's also a certain amount of addiction when it comes to working out too, because of the adrenaline and everything else inside of you that happens when you do that. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I grew up training for swimming, and then I ended up going to West Point, training for swimming and doing military stuff. So it's just, it's in there. It's not, you know, one of my old jokes with people about, you can take somebody out of the Army, but sometimes you can't take the Army out of somebody. So some of the most successful, if you will, veterans, or even people who are highly committed to training, like I'm friends with Chad Hennings, the great Dallas Cowboy, Air Force pilot, Air Force Academy graduate, is when you see Chad, you see him live a life well lived. But when you see him, he's still, you know, a very formidable athlete, even if he's maybe about my age. But you see, I mean, that's another good example where you see somebody, it's in there and it's not going, and I think it's part of his thing too, is staying in there. It's a level of kind of like ingredients for success with certain people. When you, if you take too much out, they're maybe a little less than what they're capable of being. And I think part of that serves our community, our state, our country. You know, when people are, if you use the old Army motto, be all you can be, or be all, you know, it's in there. So I love working out, and, you know, you'll ask anybody around the office and they'll, I mean, it's on my calendar. They'll see it. They'll know it. And
it's a part of who you are.
Yes, sir.
Well, let's go back to the Ironman just for a moment. I would think that swimming is the most difficult for the average Ironman athlete, and that's your forte. So what was more difficult for you? Was it cycling or was it running?
Oh, absolutely. The biking was hardest. But common misnomer is people think, well, swimmers would win the Ironman. Never in the history of Ironman World Championship Triathlon has the person who came out of the water first, either for men or women, won the race. The swim is basically a warm-up. And so you just have to be able to basically get through it in one piece, and the race really starts on the bike. And so biking's much more difficult for me. In triathlon terms, if you talk to other local or national triathletes, you know, and they saw how I did, they'd say, okay, Tad's a swimmer, runner, triathlete. And so the bike is just, I personally have to get through it. Because when I did the Ironman in 2001, I came out next to a person who was a former pro cyclist. And when I got out of the water, they flashed the screen because this was a famous pro cyclist who became a triathlete. Well, he then proceeded to beat me on the bike by an hour and a half. And I was still in the top 25% of the race by the end of the bike. So it's all about being able to bike fast and run well after biking fat. In my, you know, when you watch the race, you'll see it's all about that. And it's, but swimming is the thing that gives everybody the most fear. You know, it's the most fear-inducing part of it.
So you have to get through that fast. So if you are listening and you'd like to be a Ironman or participate, it's the cycling that you want to work on to make sure you can get through that.
Absolutely. Go to any triathlon shop around here and you'll look at the science of cycling now. And it's a much different thing than when triathlon started. And the Ironman started as a bet between three athletes, a swimmer, runner, and a biker, of who is the best athlete. And that's where Ironman got its beginnings. You know, in Hawaii, you know, the Ironman started there, and it's moved from Oahu to Kona, the Big Island is what they call it. But it's pretty neat. You know, I can bore you for hours about triathlon.
Well, let's continue with some of the lessons you've learned, because we've been talking about the military, we've been talking about Ironman competitions. What lessons have you learned with all that, with your background in the military and athletics, that you've brought to play in your business, Humcap?
you know, in not, maybe not exactly directly from the military or from triathlon, but more one of the things I talk about with people, and in Dallas especially, this plays well, is when you talk about excellence, you have to have kind of a paradigm of what's important and how is that important to you, no matter where you are. But in Dallas, you know, I've studied and I've heard him speak, you know, the late Tom Landry, the great Cowboys football coach, and he used to always talk to his players about three things. He would always tell his players and people around him, okay, I want you to, you know, here's the my paradigm of importance here is, you know, and he put it in the order of God, family, football. And he'd say, okay, players and people who want to be players and coaches and you know, everyone, is you got to get right with God. You need to get right with your family. And then we need to get right on the football field. And so I take that paradigm of spirituality, family, and work and play. And so one of the things that I talk a lot about is, okay, and you'll see it all around our company and you'll see it around our interactions, is how are we putting those priorities in play? Number one, and even when you look at our mission, winning the war for talent while living the golden rule, it has a, you know, kind of a two, you know, pronged, if you will, and using military terms, attack there. And that's hard to do both at the same time. It's a both and, as one of my mentors says about a, you know, it's the both and is where things get really challenging in life. So one is having your paradigm and having your personal philosophies in line. Is something that, and again, when you look at the Army, when you look at, you know, triathlon, you got to begin, as Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. So you kind of have to have those paradigms set and the priorities set and beginning with the end in mind. And then the second thing from the military is, I think, you know, one of the things that I notice is leading by example. I'm not asking my people to do something that I'm not personally willing to do. And as a personal services company to serve companies and people out there, there's a lot of everything that's around here that I've done before. When I first started the company, you know, there were three employees. There was Tad, there's Tad Michael, and there's Tad Michael McIntosh. And so I didn't have anybody to tell what to do. I did tell Tad. Tad told Tad what to do. So one is leading by example. It's probably one of the most important military principles, you know, I've, you know, learned and attempt to execute every single day, showing with that, when you talk about the commitment, showing with the commitment, showing with the planning, showing with the resourcing, and showing with candidly supporting people well as they do that. So one is, you know, that lead by example. And from a triathlon or an Ironman perspective, you know, it's all about preparation. You know, once the you know, the gun goes off or the beeper goes off to start a race of any sort, you know, it was won long ago. And that preparation and that planning and that, you know, commitment, then you're going to find out who was committed 30, 60, 90, 180 days ago. You know, who did plan, who did prepare, who sought advice, you know, who resourced well their commitment to their goal. And so from those kind of things, those are probably the two best lessons from the, you know, lead by example and the planning, preparation, and commitment from, you know, if you will, Ironman or endurance athlete perspective.
And as you're saying, to kind of wrap it up, you have to own it in your mind before you get into it. But a question I have before we wrap all this up, we've been talking about what you've been doing. We're talking about your company, Humcap. Where does the name Humcap come from?
Oh, okay. That's a great question. So Humcap is short for human capital. And when I started the company in 2001, a lot of my clients pre that, when I'd been work for Source Services and then I went to work for Broadband Gateways, were venture capital backed tech startups and growth companies. And so the old adage was, hey, I got my venture capital, now I need my human capital. We're about the business of helping companies have the right human capital, both through recruiting and proper human resources and technologies and services. So that's where it came from. It started out as, you know, human capital solutions, and that was too big a name. So I had to sat down and said, okay, what could work for a name, you know, to go? So we became within 6 months, Humcap, and it's kind of always stuck since
then. At the very least, very easy to remember.
Yes.
And you don't forget it.
Exactly. Every once in a while, someone calls and asks for hubcaps, but, you know, not too often.
That's okay,
anymore.
As long as they get a hold of you.
Yeah, exactly. They can find us.
That's right. Well, Tad, thank you very much for becoming a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are definitely a playmaker.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
A playmaker is somebody that makes things happen, and, Tad, you've been making things happen in your past and also with hubcaps. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
This has been a terrific show. We just spoke with Tad McIntosh. Tad is president and CEO of Hubcap. Thanks to Tad for being a playmaker. It's great having him on the show, and thanks to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.